Good morning. Welcome. The press briefing of today, Tuesday, 27th of May. As you had seen, we had no active briefer until a little time ago. People and colleagues here to answer your questions. However, in the meantime, Juliette Thomas from UNRWA told us that she's going to join us at 11 o'clock with a statement from Commissioner General Lazzarini of UNRWA, and she will take questions. But we have colleagues here in the meantime, including from ILO, ITU, OCHA, UNHCR, and Margaret, who's on my left. So I'll start with her. She has an announcement for you.
Good morning, everybody. Yes, we are planning a press conference here in the Salle de Presse as soon as the World Health Assembly closes today. There are still some issues being debated, so the World Health Assembly is taking longer. But the plan is to have it at 1600 this afternoon here in the Salle de Presse. It will also be online, so it will be a hybrid presser, and we will have people beyond the Palais Press Corps joining. But, of course, everybody in the room gets first question and gets, you know, number one advantage. And as you know, we've had big subjects. We've got the pandemic agreement. We've got the financing. A 20% increase in membership fees has been agreed. And we've got a lot of different other issues: lung health, skin diseases, traditional medicine, and health financing. And all the people who are expert in those areas will be coming as well. So, as usual, we'll have our very large cast of characters, and you can basically ask any question you like.
So, yes, I see Chris has a question for Margaret.
Is the DG coming?
Oh, yes, absolutely. He's the headline. Yes.
I had seen another hand this side. Yes, Emma.
Thank you. I wanted to ask actually about the Indonesian hospital in Gaza. We're hearing there's a breaking news situation. Indonesian hospital in Gaza that apparently is under attack. I'm sorry, it's just coming in. I don't know any details, and I wanted to see if you had any. Thank you.
I don't have anything specific. I can ask my colleagues, but Indonesia certainly has not been able to function very effectively because of the continuing attacks, yes.
Maybe we'll have more this afternoon, or maybe you can ask the question also to Juliette. Maybe she has something new when she joins. So I have a question for Margaret, because as you may all know, this is her last briefing, and my question to her is: are you happy that you're going to retire, Margaret, and leave this world of news and?
I'm going to be really sad to leave this room and these people. I find it so stimulating. And also what you all do, how you bring what really matters to the world every time, whether it be during COVID, whether it be during the Ukraine conflict, whether it's Gaza, we see every time the impact of your work. And that, to me, is the most exciting thing, because our job is to provide the information, the right information. But we can't do it unless it's really you who complete that action. Mm-hmm. And I find that tremendously exciting. So, yeah, I'll be very sad not to be here. But there are other things I won't miss.
So I think I can just say thank you so much to Margaret for all the tremendous work that she has done, really, to bring the voice of WHO to the journalists, to the press corps in Geneva, and of course beyond. I think we will regret you a lot, Margaret. I know your colleagues will be here to continue your work, but I think your legacy is very, very important. I have been on this podium many times with you. Sometimes questions came, you know, surprisingly, sometimes we had to find an agreement here on the podium. Sometimes we had everything ready. Sometimes it just came out from your mouth so well, so rightly, that I can only thank you very much for your fantastic professionalism, your teamwork skills, and your kindness. So I think that I think Akanu also wants to say something.
Yes, Margaret. Good morning. We already spoke this morning, so I wanted to tell you that you will be horribly missed by all the Geneva Press Corps, and not only the profession as you are, Dr. Margaret Harris, but also as an exceptional human being. Thank you. And good luck.
Thank you very much. I think she deserves a huge round of applause. Margaret, thank you so much. And I'm sure that people online is also are also very much saying goodbye, but goodbye, not farewell. We will be happy to see you this afternoon for the last press conference, yes, end of WHA, and say goodbye again, and thank you very much for everything. Thank you. I have another couple of announcements while we are waiting for Juliet. And the first one is from the Human Rights Council, who asks me to inform you that today the council will hold an expert workshop on the role of the family and family-oriented approaches, policies, and programs in the promotion and protection of human rights and in sustainable development. This will happen on 28th and 29th of May in room 20 at the Palais des Nations. So you are invited to this expert workshop. I also have, to inform you that the Committee on the Rights of the Child will conclude next Friday its 99th session and issue its concluding observation on Norway, Indonesia, Iraq, Romania, Qatar, and Brazil, which are the six countries that reviewed at this session. The Conference on Disarmament is holding this morning a brief plenary meeting. This is the first meeting under the presidency of Mrs. Fancy Chepkemoid II of the Republic of Kenya. So, have you got, I've told you we have all these colleagues in the room or online, ILO, ITU, OCHA, UNHCR, and of course WHO. Here to answer your questions. While we are waiting for Julia to join, is there any question for any of our colleagues? Any of those I have mentioned, of course. Yep, Emma.
I'd love any update on the aid situation in Gaza, if maybe Jens might be able to say something, if you have anything for us.
I don't know if Jens has something. Maybe he'll come on the podium when Juliet joins. Is that okay with you, Jens? So that you can do something together. Any other question on the ILO conference starting next week? Any other question to ITU? No? Okay, so is that a hand, Katrine, or it's a hand on the other side? Okay, so if there are no others, let's wait for Julia to connect. Maybe while we are waiting, I wanted to tell you this on Friday, but I can already maybe just give you a save the date. There are two commemorations next week of International Days that we are going to celebrate here at the Palais. The first one is on Tuesday, the 3rd of June. The day is World Bicycle Day. I know that many of you are bicycling, and we are bicycling too. So I just wanted to tell you that if you want to join with your bike at 9:30 at Pregny Gate, we will have a group of ambassadors, staff, and if you want, also join journalists that will travel from the Pregny Gate to the Broken Chair with bikes. We will try to take pictures while the group is coming downhill, and there will be also a position at the Place des Nations at the Broken Chair where we will take pictures and do some talking about the bicycle, the importance that bicycling has for health and for the environment and in general for good humor, because that's something that makes you feel well. And the other commemoration I wanted to mention is on the same day, Tuesday, 3rd of June, but this time at 4 p.m., we will commemorate the International Day of the UN Peacekeepers with the usual ceremony outside in the Ariana Park, where we will welcome quite a few former peacekeepers. The International Association of Peacekeepers is going to take them. We will also have the participation of the Swiss Armed Forces, and Ambassador Grassi of Italy, and also the Ambassador of Ghana will be able to deliver some remarks together with the Director General and the President of the International Association of Peacekeepers. So these two commemorations on the 3rd of June. I remind you on Friday. Let me see if Juliette has now joined. No, not yet. Okay. So if you don't mind to wait a little bit more. Yes, Catherine, you've got something maybe?
Yes, as we have time. Do you have any news about the DG, Madame Valovaya, organizing a press conference with the Geneva Press Corps?
Yeah, I'm sorry, because as the committee knows, we had scheduled this for the, I think it was last week. Unfortunately, the DG had very conflicting schedule, and she's also leaving for a little time. So we will definitely try to schedule it as soon as she comes back.
Any idea if it's still going to be during the month of June?
Yeah, we'll try to do it during the month of June, yeah.
Thank you. Alessandra, I take the opportunity. Maybe as we have the spokesperson of ITU in this room, it would be maybe interesting to know about what's on the news, in the news about WhatsApp, Instagram, and all these apps. Can he tell us more about Meta? Good morning, dear.
Are you speaking about the artificial intelligence?
Meta and the artificial intelligence used on different apps.
Thank you. I don't have anything specific on the question that you're asking. I know of what you're asking. I would have to direct questions relative to corporate policies and to usership to the various elements on that. ITU, ultimately for ITU, obviously the mission is for to ensure universal and meaningful connectivity and sustainable digital transformation, and to create the enabling factors so that not only are people connected, but they can use technology. But as far as it relates to corporate policies, as far as it relates to government policies, we will leave those questions for you to answer those authorities. If I could, I would take a couple of moments just to maybe update,
please,
if I could,
please.
On some activities that are coming up that might be of interest and maybe relate. In that, in the month of June, we'll have coming up next week, we hope, a report that we hope to be able to issue under embargo, and that would be the Greening Digital Companies Report, which is an annual survey of the tech industry and relative to how it is performing on sustainability. In the latter part of the month, we'll have the AI for Good and WSIS activities that will be at PAL Expo this year. So for those that are planning, please ensure that the planning includes coming to PAL Expo to join from the 7th to 11th of July at PAL Expo, and we'll make that credentialing process as seamless, as simple for you as we can. The link is available online if you have any challenge accessing that or getting your credential, let us know. But typically, we can get that done for you fairly quickly. And other than that, beyond that, I'll say as far as the ITU's GIGA program, which is a partnership with UNICEF, which is aimed at connecting all the schools in the world online by 2030, that in the early part of July as well, the GIGA Connectivity Forum will be happening here in Geneva.
Thank you very much, Katrine.
Yes, follow up, David. About connecting the schools, with whom are you working? Okay, you mentioned UNICEF, but we know that so many schools don't have access to electricity and clean water. So how do you intend to connect them? And also, I take this opportunity to kindly request again what ACANU asked previously, meaning special technical briefings that could be organized by ITU and ACANU on very technical matters, so we can take time and not use the UN weekly briefings to do so.
Not to say that we're not proud, yes, for me to be doing a little house music today, you know, with little Phil while Julia comes in. We will, in the context of GIGA, we're looking to put together a briefing. I wouldn't necessarily call it a technical briefing, but certainly something to talk a little bit about that program, talk about its presence around the world, in Geneva, in Barcelona, and talk about how ITU and UNICEF are working together to use technology, to use the expertise of those organizations to try to connect those schools. But I would prefer to pull that together and have our technical experts to talk about, because there are a lot of elements that are involved there relative to mapping, relative to understanding where these schools are, relative to understanding where the gaps are, and making sure those connections can happen. I would say, though, relative to that, though, making those connections happen is ultimately becomes the responsibility of the communities, of the states that are there, but ITU and UNICEF stand ready to support those communities and those states in their efforts to connect schools.
Thank you very much, David. Oh, John, I think, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. You can cut me off if the connection comes through. David, this conference coming up, an AI for Good, will there be sessions on different policies concerning privacy and databases? The views vary from country to country. The views are different in the US, the EU, Brazil. And secondly, also the protection of individuals' private social media. Can that be shared without prior informed consent? What has ITU got any overview or preparing any policy sessions in that high-level segment of AI for Good? Because some prominent figures like Sir Elton John are challenging what's happening at the government level, at least in the UK.
Okay, again. Noting that our guest is, I think, now here, I would say that the complete schedule is online. There's a schedule of activities from the 8th through the 11th for AI for Good, again at PAL Expo, and we will get a briefing together for you on that. So I appreciate the question, but I probably turn it back over.
Thank you very much. And I see that Juliet is now connected. David, thank you very much. Keep updating the journalist on this. It's going to be the summer event together with other couple of them that we will tell you about later on. So I'd like to thank very much Juliet to join us from Amman. You have all seen that on Friday, the Secretary General has given a press encounter on the humanitarian situation in Gaza, detailing the five-stage plan of the United Nations to end the long-suffering situation for the people of Gaza. Juliet, you come to us with another statement this morning from Commissioner General Lazzarini, and we are here to listen to you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Alessandra, also for taking me at a short notice. And hi, everyone. In fact, a couple of updates from my side, also things that happened overnight. So I will start with the events in East Jerusalem at the UNRWA compound, the compound that normally hosted the headquarters of the agency and the field operations for the occupied West Bank, including East Jerusalem for UNRWA. The incident was yesterday midday. A group of Israelis led by a member of parliament, Israeli Knesset, accompanied by Israeli media, they entered without authorization into the UNRWA compound in the area of Sheikh Jarrah, that is in occupied East Jerusalem. The group said that they were, quote unquote, liberating the former UNRWA headquarters. They brought with them flags and erected banners seeking to claim the compound for the establishment of a new Israeli settlement on the compound following months of aggravated harassment directed towards that site, which is in the home, like I said, to the headquarters of the agency, the field offices of our operations in the occupied West Bank. The entry into force of two anti-UNRWA Knesset bills that I've spoken to you here several times. In January last this year, UNRWA was forced, as you may know, to vacate that compound and withdraw under protest all of its international staff. They didn't get any visas, any extensions to their visas from the Israeli authorities. This is an unauthorized entry. It represents another violation of Israel's obligation as a UN member state to protect UN premises and facilitate humanitarian work. And this is an illegal provocation. Now, I asked to join this briefing because the Commissioner General of UNRWA released a statement on something related but different. This statement follows a letter that the Commissioner General wrote to the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Israel. He sent it recently. And there are some extracts from this letter that he wished I convey to you. His statement says, over the past 20 months, the government of Israel has continued to make unsubstantiated claims against UNRWA and its neutrality. These claims have put the lives of UNRWA staff at serious risk and harmed the reputation of the agency. In a letter I have recently written to the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Israel, I repeated concrete steps that UNRWA has taken for over a decade in cooperation with the government of Israel, in line with transparency and neutrality. In that regard, the agency has requested on several occasions for cooperation from the government of Israel by providing information and evidence to substantiate the numerous accusations made against UNRWA. To date, UNRWA has not received any response, nor has the government of Israel shared any sufficient evidence to back up these very serious claims against the agency and its personnel. The United Nations depends on member states for security and information concerning its premises and personnel. Member states, not the United Nations, are responsible for criminal investigations and persecutions of armed militant activity. It is therefore expected that member states will pursue their investigations in compliance with due process and report to the United Nations on the outcomes of these processes where they may impact upon United Nations operations or staff. In this case, the Commissioner General continues, the government of Israel has neither shared adequate evidence with the United Nations to allow substantiation through administrative processes, nor pursued its own criminal proceedings, which would also require the presentation of credible evidence and due process. Had the government of Israel taken either of these steps and cooperated with UNRWA, the agency could have acted in accordance with its regulations and due process. The minimum requirements are sufficient evidence and due process. The absence of this more than 1 year later raises the possibility that the accusations were unfounded. In the letter, the Commissioner General of UNRWA urges once again the State of Israel to renew a decades-long cooperation with UNRWA in line with the United Nations Charter and other international frameworks. He has requested that they put to an end, they meaning the government of Israel, the unfounded disinformation campaign against the agency. He's also stated in the letter that UNRWA, together with other UN agencies, is ready to continue the critical work it does in humanitarian relief, education, and primary health care to Palestine refugees. Gaza is a case in point where UNRWA has the supplies and the structure to deliver at scale. That was the statement that we just issued from the Commissioner General of UNRWA based on the letter that he sent to the Minister of Foreign Affairs in Israel. The copy of the letter can be shared with the media upon request. Back to you, Alessandra. Any questions? I'm ready. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for this statement. Juliet gives me the opportunity to remind the several appeals in the sense that has been done evident by the Secretary General, who called UNRWA several times the backbone of the humanitarian response in the occupied Palestinian territory. So I'll open now the floor to questions in the room. I'll start with the room. AFP, Christophe.
Question for Juliet, if she's still online.
She's taking questions. That's why I'm opening the floor to questions to her.
I didn't see you on the screen. That's why. So thank you. I had actually two questions. I was just wondering why this statement by Mr. Lazzarini comes now. If you have any, if you can give us some enlightenment on that. And the second question is this Gaza Humanitarian Foundation was supposed to have started distribution of aid yesterday. I was just wondering if you saw how much that was, if it's true, if you have any comment on that. I know that you don't want to collaborate with them, but I was just wondering if you could give us some witness of how much they distributed, or if any. And the same question on the Gaza Foundation goes to Jens, of course.
Thank you very much. Let me start with Juliet.
Yeah, thanks for unmuting me. Thanks for the question, the colleague from AFP. on the timing of the letter. Look, it's been the case that the government of Israel has continued to put out these unsubstantiated claims against the agency, including over the past couple of weeks. You will see that in the letter. There was a news release with additional claims without any evidence, without any substantiating to these claims. There was a report that we understand is about 70 pages that the Ministry of Foreign Affairs has made available on certain websites and shared with media outlets, but also with member states, including UNRWA donors. And so this was the last attempt. And like I said, it's been over 20 months of these claims coming our way, harming the agency's reputation, of course, but more importantly, putting the lives of our staff, especially those working in the occupied Palestinian territory, at a risk. On to your second question, I do not have any information on these reports. We've seen those reports. We've also seen some photos that we, of course, cannot confirm. What I do know, however, is that the needs are 500 to 600 trucks at a minimum that should go into Gaza, loaded with supplies, not only food, but also medicine, medical supplies, vaccines for children, fuel, water, and other basics for people's survival. And we're very, very, very far from reaching that target. Back to you.
Thank you, Juliet. Jens, do you want to add anything?
It would be a bit of a repetition. As we have explained many times, we do not participate in this modality for the reasons that we have given. It is a distraction from what is actually needed, which is a reopening of all the crossings into Gaza, a secure environment within Gaza, and faster facilitation of permissions and final approvals of all the emergency supplies that we have just outside the border and needs to get in. Thanks.
Absolutely. Isabel Sacco, Juliet is our EFE correspondent.
Maybe this is, this is maybe for Jens, because following what you just said, does it mean that for the moment UN activities, humanitarian activities in Gaza are completely stopped? Because this, I understand that this organization founded, or private, US-founded private organization is distributing aid. Apparently, we have seen some pictures. We don't know that that is true or not. But for UN, from UN side, is completely stopped.
I think Juliet will remind us we have thousands of workers in Gaza who continue to work, but maybe Juliet, you want to say something about it, and Jens?
Let me start before Jens. The UN in the Gaza Strip does not just distribute supplies, right? For example, the organization where I work, UNRWA, we have over 6,000 people working for the agency. They do several things. For example, they manage shelters where we have tens of thousands of people who have sought refuge in UNRWA shelters, United Nations premises that are supposed to be protected by law, except they haven't. We also run United Nations clinics as another example, where doctors, United Nations doctors working for UNRWA, provide medical care for just the sake of the argument. Our medical teams provide at least 17,000 consultations every single day in clinics. We also have mobile health points that are spread around the Gaza Strip. So we also have psychosocial activities. UNICEF has the same. So it's a wide array, if you wish, of services that the UN gives. Now, supplies is really important, because to give much of these services, especially in places like the UNRWA clinics, we simply need medical supplies and medicines. and those have not come in. For UNRWA in particular, no supplies have come in, even during this small window that we've seen with some supplies that went in for other UN agencies. But we have over 3,000 trucks, in fact, not only of food, but also of medicines that are lining up in places like Jordan, like Egypt, that are waiting for the green light to go in. And they're carrying medicines, and that is expiring soon.
Jens, I think she's been quite explanatory, but maybe you want to add something?
Yeah, no, just to stress that, of course, we have not stopped operating. We have staff. But as you know very well, we are running on almost 12 weeks, I believe, of blockade with an opening where there is allowed a vastly insufficient amount of aid into the Gaza Strip. And we need much more. So that's what I will say on that.
Emma Farge, Reuters.
Jens, just to follow up, obviously you're not involved with this modality, but what I would like to know is, are these trucks for the GHF coming in at the expense of your trucks? I imagine only a few can get through the Kerem Shalom crossing right now. It's very restricted, and they could probably only process or are only processing a certain number. So does that mean that yours are stuck at the border while these ones are green-lighted through? That's what I'd like to know. And more generally, for anyone who wants to come in on this, there are allegations that the GHF is using facial recognition technology. Could you react to that allegation? You presumably you don't know if it's true or not, but would the UN in any circumstances use this, and why or why not? Thank you very much.
I'll do the reverse order, Jens and then Juliette.
Thank you. Thank you for using the word modality. Well, whether it's one is at expense of the other, you'll have to ask those who disallow or allow aid to come in. So you have to ask the Israelis. I can't say. The decision is not ours. It's in the hands of the Israelis, who have created this blockade and this absolutely disastrous situation from A to Z. Right? Facial recognition, I don't think that is something that we would use in this particular instance. I mean, there are other emergencies where such things such as iris recognition and those kind of things have been used to make sure that people don't go for the same aid twice or, you know, things like that. Not I have no experience with that from the Middle East, but from Africa, for example. So it's not unusual. Of course, we use very advanced technology for the purpose of facilitating aid in an equitable and fair manner to people who need it.
I give the floor to Juliette, but before doing so, I'd like to apologize because I have another briefing to give and Rolando is taking over. I leave you in his capable hands, and thank you so much, Juliette, on my side. But we will continue the briefing with Rolando. Thank you. Juliette, go ahead.
Thanks, Alessandra, and greetings also from the UNRWA CG for having us today at short notice. I don't have anything else to add at this stage. Rolando, back to you.
Thank you, Juliette. Good afternoon, colleagues. Good morning. Still, good morning. So we have questions. Let's exhaust those in the room. John Zarkosis in the back row.
Yeah, Jens, if you could bring us up to speed on the number of trucks that have been authorized by the Israelis, UN trucks and other humanitarian agencies to go in. And if we have the breakdown, Juliette just mentioned medical supplies are not going in. If Juliette could elaborate, what are some of these medical supplies that are at risk of expiring, waiting in the queue? Is it vaccines or is it for chronic diseases? If you can get some details, thank you.
Back to you, Juliette.
Yes, thank you very much. When it comes to UNRWA, I can confirm that no supplies whatsoever have gone in since the siege began, Israeli imposed siege began on the 2nd of March. Now, we have clinics, we have pharmacies that the agency runs, and there we normally would distribute medicines against chronic diseases, for example, for hypertension, for diabetes, but also basic medicines, things like paracetamol, and then childhood diseases. And these are the supplies, these are the medicines that we're running out of, and we have supplies, we have those exact medicines waiting outside for them to get into Gaza as soon as we get the green light before they expire.
Thank you very much. For the questions in the room, you have a follow-up, John?
No, Jens didn't give me the breakdown, the UN trucks
sorry.
That have
yes,
gone in.
Indeed.
And the number, thanks.
So as you know, there are two numbers to operate, and we're talking about trucks and truckloads and whatnot. So one is what we can drive to the Kerem Shalom on the Israeli side of that crossing. The other part of that is what we are able to pick up at Kerem Abu Salam, which is the name on the Gazan side of that same crossing. And those are not necessarily the same things. As you know, they need to move through a process there. there's a difference between the two because we are not always able to collect what is being dropped off on the other side because of the insecure routes that are being assigned to us by the Israeli authorities to use. The bottom line, again, is that we are talking about a vastly insufficient amount of aid that eventually enters Gaza at the moment. That's why we need opening of more crossings. We need all types of aid, not aid that is cherry-picked by the Israeli side that we are allowed to get in. But what we know from our assessments and our experiences, Gaza, is actually needed today. That's the kind of stuff we need to get in vast quantities.
Thanks, Jens. Isabel, you had your hand up. Efe?
Yes. Juliet, thank you very much for your clarifications to my first question. And with the 6,000 people that work still working with for UNRWA in Gaza, do you have any way to monitor what is happening inside? Even if I understand that you are not able now to go with aid inside Gaza, but are you able to monitor if people are receiving something? What is the situation there? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. We do not have international presence in Gaza. So since the Knesset law, the Israeli parliament law, came into effect, the Israeli authorities stopped giving us visas to access the occupied Palestinian territory that also includes Gaza. And we had colleagues who stayed in Gaza despite that, international colleagues, but they also left a couple of weeks ago. And since then, the operation is managed very capably by our local Palestinian staff on the ground, with whom we are in touch quite often all the time in the case of the management team of Gaza. Now, what they're saying is that supplies are vastly running out, medical supplies. For example, food, flour in particular, that was the largest component of the food supplies. Flour has run out over a month ago. So we couldn't distribute anymore because we simply run out. On the medicine situation, it's not looking good either. Stuff is running out, hence why, like Jens said, there must be a standard flow at volume. This is why we say 500, 600 trucks a day, including to UNRWA. Like we've done in the ceasefire, because if you remember during the ceasefire, this is exactly what we were able to bring in. The UN family, the humanitarian organizations, and the UN includes UNRWA.
Isabel, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, maybe I didn't express myself well, but what I would like to know if you are able to monitor or to witness that this private aid organization is really redistributing aid in Gaza.
No, on that front, like I said to the first question from IFP, no, we don't have any information, nor are we able to confirm this information. We know what's needed, we know what's missing. And like I said, we are very, very far from that daily target.
Well noted, thank you. We have one further question online. Yuri of RIA Novosti. Yuri.
Yes, thank you, Rolando. My question is for Juliet. It is a question regarding the situation that you described that happened yesterday in your compound in the Jerusalem East. Just yes. To be sure, how many members of the Knesset were there? And in total, how many people were there? Did you have staff at the same time inside the compound when it happened? How long they still inside? And they were with the police or they were with their own security guards? Thank you.
Yeah. Whether there were staff inside the compound, no, there were no staff inside the compound when this incident happened. We have a security company that guards the compound from the outside. They were there, but despite that, this Israeli group has managed to go into that compound, which is a violation of international law. On the members of the Knesset, I don't have the exact number. We're still figuring out all the details. I can confirm, however, that at least one Knesset member was there. You may have seen she's given statements to the media. I missed the other questions. It was too fast for me. Could you say again those questions, please?
Would you mind repeating that, Yuri? The second part of your question?
Yeah, it's just to know if they were with the police or if they were with their own security guards, and in total, how many people were there, not only from the Knesset, but in total?
In total, we're talking about maximum a couple of dozen, so let's say give or take between 15 to 20 people, give or take. And then the police came afterwards, in fact.
Thanks for that clarification. Juliet, we have a question now from Nick, New York Times.
Yeah, thanks. It's a question to Jens, following up on Isabel's and Emma's earlier questions about trucks going across the Kerem Shalom crossing point. Could you just tell us, have any trucks crossed in the last 24 hours, UN trucks? It wasn't clear whether, since the distribution of aid by GHF has started, that UN trucks have stopped crossing. So I just want to check whether or not UN trucks are still being authorized to cross from the Israeli side to the Gaza side, and that is still going on. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Nick. I don't have that number, and one of the reasons is that we don't have a fixed presence at the crossing. We are not allowed one by the Israelis.
Thank you, Jens. Further questions, colleagues? Online or in the room, I don't see that's the case. So I think we could wrap up this briefing. Juliet, thank you, as always, for joining us here on sharing this statement, which I trust you've sent to us in writing. So thank you very much for the updates on both fronts, and to you, as always, Jens, and to colleagues. And let me just add my thanks to Margaret, my friend and colleague. You're not off the hook yet. You've got to come back here for the press briefing. Do we have a time for that press briefing? Did we announce it already? 1600. Okay, so we'll see you here at 4 o'clock this afternoon. WHO. Okay. Anyway, colleagues, thank you very much. I think all the announcements have been exhausted. Bhatti, did you have a question, or is that for me? Oh, okay. So I'm not off the hook. Bhatti, go ahead. You're off the hook. Go ahead, Bhatti.
No, simple question for the schedule this week. Simple question for schedule this week. to schedule for if we have the schedule.
Didn't Alessandro mention that? Boy, I was listening with one ear.
About next week. We have assembly of ILO. So was that the plan for ILO? And access of journalists, I think.
That's a question I think you should point to our colleagues at ILO, Zaina. I don't know if Zaina is connected online, but indeed we have another big meeting. We are ending one today and starting another big one next week, the International Labour Governing Council, the ILO meeting. So do point your question to Zaina. I don't have an update for you. I don't have the details, but indeed, let me just check to see if she's online. No, she's not. But yeah, Bodhi, let me get back to you, or you can liaise directly with our ILO colleagues, okay? I think that's it, unless there are any further questions. No? On that note, thank you very much, and have a good afternoon. See you here on Friday.